Doing a Facebook Live was a bit weird.
Oh, that was that was very strange. And, oh, I'm so not good at, obviously.
Well, I think it was fine. Our technology needs to improve slightly because the replay video isn't the best quality. But it's there.
Okay, we don't have the best stuff because we just don't.
Yeah, if we ever sort out a Patreon or anything like that, that could improve.
Yes, yes. We have been talking about a Patreon.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to see us do a Patreon, let us know.
Please let us know, because, you know, you guys are our wonderful support group, and I would love to say thank you so much to our new people who have joined us.
Mm.
Our new likers, thank you so much, and we love you.
And everyone who has joined us previously and liked us previously,
yes,
we love you too. You are all awesome.
We do, we do. We welcome old and new likers.
Mm-hmm.
Alike.
Of all type. We've already had a big long waffle on Facebook. I think we probably should get on with the podcast.
Yeah, we brought Felix in. I showed off my pants, which probably nobody could see. I was obviously still wearing them. Okay. Yes. I'd just like to point that out. I was still wearing my pants. And my TARDIS shirt.
And we are not sponsored by Doctor Who.
Or BBC. But if they would like to, we could probably afford much better stuff.
Mm.
So, hi.
Hi. And on with the podcast.
Yes, welcome to the show.
What the?
History.
History.
Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history to make you say, what the history?
What the? Totally indeed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think we've got quite the what the tonight. I am Trevor Holland and I am joined by...
Susie Holland, the owner of the aforementioned awesome TARDIS pants, which we're not sponsored by BBC or Doctor Who. As we said that before.
We don't need to repeat our waffle of the main thing, do we?
Okay, no more waffle. All right.
Yeah, excellent. Nothing. So, putting the waffle to one side, what a wonderful bit of bizarre history do you have for us?
All right. I've got one that made me shake my head and laugh and cringe at the same time. So, yeah, buckle in. This is going to be a good one. In my research, I find all kinds of whacked out stories. And lately, I've been drawn to the exploits of the life and the afterlives of American gangsters, bank and train robbers such as Bonnie and Clyde, Al Capone, John Dillinger and Lucky Luciano, to name a few. Elmer was born in Maine in 1880 and spent time wandering around until he enlisted with the US Army in 1910, and then he discovered his love for exploding things with nitroglycerine, a handy talent to have if one is a train robber, which became his profession after leaving the Army. Probably not the best career move there, Elmer. But anyway. Mm. Problem was, he had a reputation of not being that good at using the nitro, and in 1911, in his first attempt to rob a train, which was of the Pacific Express Company, Elmer used too much nitro and not only exploded the door of the safe off its hinges, but blew a hole in the side of the train, causing the loot inside... Oh, God, this guy's a cluster, you know what. Causing the loot inside of $4,000 worth in silver coins to be liquefied. Yay, Elmer. Oh, God. Elmer and his gang thought that attempting to crowbar the silver that had been splattered over what was left of the train car would be a good idea, and proceeded to chip away and obtained approximately $450 worth of silver out of $4,000 worth of silver. Yay, good one. Then they made their getaway. Not long after this attempt at a life of crime, the gang unsurprisingly dropped Elmer, but he found new gang members and plans were underway to rob another train, and hoping it wouldn't be a mess like the last time, literal and figuratively.
Mm.
In October, a few months after the first train robbery, the gang decided to rob the Missouri, Kansas, Texas Railroad train number 23, which the gang believed was the money train. They held up this train successfully and made off with, drum roll please, $46 and two jugs of whiskey. Then it dawned on the gang that they had robbed the wrong train. It was actually a passenger train, with the money train being the one behind it, due to a misreading of the timetable. But not to look a gift horse in the mouth, the gang celebrated and took off to a hideout. The lawmen followed and surrounded them in the hideout. By this stage, Elmer was so drunk, he attempted to take the law on, and a shootout ensued with Elmer being shot dead by the police posse. Oh. Now, that's all pretty much what the... Mm-hmm. Oh, poor Elmer. But the fun was just beginning. Elmer's body was taken to the Pawhuska, Oklahoma funeral home and bathed in arsenic to preserve the body. When no one came forward to claim Elmer in death, the funeral home owner decided to put Elmer in the front window to display him in various poses. The arsenic had preserved him so well that Elmer was now a mummy, with spectators being charged a nickel to see the body of the train robber. He stayed there being a novelty in the shop window for 5 years.
Oh,
really? And there's also stories that they used to put him on roller skates and roll him out to scare people. Oh, God, I feel guilty laughing. Oh, for goodness sake. Then in 1916, a man visited the funeral home, saying he was Elmer's brother and wanted to give him a proper burial, and took off with the body after paying the expenses from the funeral home for the embalming. Alas, though, he was not Elmer's brother, but a representative of the Great Patterson Shows, a travelling carnival company who displayed Elmer as the, quote, outlaw who never gave up, end quote, and the, again, quote, Oklahoma outlaw. Oh, dear. The body went from place to place, owner to owner, sometimes billed as the, quote, again, Oklahoma's outlaw mummy, end quote, again, or some sort of ancient cadaver, with people forgetting over the years that Elmer was once a real person.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God. In 1933, the body was even used as a prop in a theatre lobby for promotion of the movie Narcotic. The body ended up at the New Pike Amusement Park, Long Beach, California, at the Laugh in the Dark Funhouse as some kind of creepy prop. For years, people were very close to Elmer's face, not knowing that the body was actually real. God. However, in 1976, after Elmer had been on display for 60 years in various locations, stop it, and positions, it was finally realized that the body was not made of plastic, wax, foam, or whatever, but was flesh and bones and very real. How this came about was during the TV show, the $6 Million Man episode, Carnival of Spies, was filming in the funhouse when a crew member accidentally damaged what he thought was a bright orange neon wax mannequin, and the arm fell off. Reports say the mannequin was actually hanging in a noose around the neck. The assembled cast and crew were shocked to discover that the arm and shoulder was flesh and bone, and therefore the authorities were quickly contacted. Medical examiner Thomas Noguchi confirmed that the mannequin was in fact a body, and then he moved to the mouth of the corpse and found inside the mouth a 1924 penny and a ticket for Sonny's Amusement Museum of Crime in Los Angeles, where Elmer was for much of the 30s and 40s. The ticket, together with archived newspaper articles from that time, led to the positive identification that the well-traveled cadaver was that of Elmer McCurdy. Elmer was finally laid to rest in April 1977 at Summit View Cemetery in Guthrie, Oklahoma, with 2 feet of concrete over his coffin to ensure his body never goes on any trips again. In the newspaper, the Lakeland Ledger, dated April 23, 1977, there is an article on Elmer with the byline, "Elmer McCurdy goes home to Boot Hill, buried 66 years late." What the history indeed there, Elmer.
Wow.
Oh, God. Like I said, it made me cringe, it made me laugh, and it made me just go, what the? And I went, this is perfect. This is exactly the sort of thing I'm interested in writing about. And, yeah, poor Elmer.
Yeah, had more adventures after he died than when he was alive.
That's right.
Guess it just goes to show that things can get a bit rowdy when drinks involved.
Absolutely, $46 worth and 2 whiskey jugs. Dear, oh dear.
They should have been in a decent licensed establishment. This never would have happened.
It's not stolen from a train, Trent.
No. I'm trying to do a segue here. It's not an easy segue.
No, it's not. But I am seeing what you're trying to do, and I commend you for that.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to get on with it then. Now, there is an old saying, practice what you preach, that is regularly used to encourage people to set good examples. Sometimes, however, people forget this saying and we end up with a what the situation that lives on in infamy. We are going way, way back this time, guys. Strap yourselves in.
I'm strapped.
For we are journeying to the ancient dusty times of 2013.
Woo!
And the exotic location of Wigan in the UK.
Yay!
This one needs a bit of a background check, but we will get there. The Best Bar None program is a scheme in the UK backed by the British Home Office and the British Institute of Innkeepers. It originated in 2003 with a pilot program being trialled in Manchester before rolling out to cover most of Britain. The aim of the scheme is primarily to encourage licensed venues to effectively reduce, and I quote, alcohol-related crime and disorder, end quote. By participating in the scheme and seeking Best Bar None accreditation, venues get recognition and promotion, a reputation for being a safe venue, and the opportunity to win awards. So it was that the Wigan Council launched the 2013 Best Bar None program in April of that year, hoping to have more of its local establishments join up and compete for the grand prize. Right from the outset, 18 venues signed up from 17 the previous year, and by August, 20 venues had joined. The venues competed to impress the judges. Criteria included how crowds and capacity were controlled, that all staff were appropriately licensed, that the impact of noise or litter in the local community wasn't too bad, and also how they dealt with any illegal substances that may appear. By September, Wigan Council was happy to release figures showing a fall in violent crime, which was directly contributed to the record number of venues participating in the scheme. The figures, when compared to the previous year, showed an 8.9% reduction in serious wounding, 20% reduction in less serious wounding, and 2% reduction in robbery, leading to Councilman Kevin Anderson saying, quote, "The fact that crime rates have reduced by 30.9% overall since the launch of Best Bar None is no coincidence. I truly believe this scheme has been pivotal in making the town centre a safer place." End quote. And Superintendent Andrea Jones stated, quote, "Working together, we have made Wigan a safer place to live, visit and work. We want people to enjoy our thriving town, but at the same time, we need to make sure that people are safe and feel safe. Best Bar None has contributed significantly to this." End quote. So it was that on 25th of October 2013, the Wigan Best Bar None Awards were held. In all, 18 venues received their accreditation at a gala event held at Wigan's DW Stadium. Special awards were even handed out to the best achievers. The Hub won Best Club, by the way, with the Independents coming a close second.
I love that. Independents,
yes. The pub category was dominated by Moon Underwater, with Harry's being pipped at the post. The best bar was Revolution. Reflex won the silver. Not to be left out, readers of the Wigan Evening Post got to vote, and they put their support behind the Last Orders pub.
I love these names.
Oh, they're great. Celebrations went on into the night and the early hours of the following morning, and that's when things went a bit what the. Police were called to the stadium around 1:25 a.m. on the 26th of October to reports that a brawl had broken out. An ambulance was required to treat one reveller who had minor injuries, however no arrests were made. According to witnesses, the fight broke out between employees of two of the licensed premises who had received accreditation at the ceremony. One of the witnesses stated, quote, "It would be funny if it wasn't so excruciatingly embarrassing." Of all the occasions for a fight to break out, you couldn't pick something worse than an evening when pubs, bars and clubs are winning awards for keeping the peace. End quote.
I love this.
There were calls for the brawlees to be identified and the venues they worked for to be stripped of their accreditation due to the embarrassing nature of the fight. I have been unable to look at details of any consequences from the event, though.
God.
However, for having the employees of venues being awarded for reducing violence, breaking into a fight, the Wigan Best Bar None Awards of 2013 will forever be remembered in the annals of What the History.
And they are very worthy inclusion of the annals of What the History. I love that.
I know.
It's a bit naughty that they did brawl, but on that night.
Just
I couldn't have waited another night.
And that just goes to show, What the History can happen at any time, anywhere.
It's like the goodies. Anytime, anywhere.
We've already said we're not sponsored by the BBC.
It's just what it reminds me of. Oh, God.
And on that note,
I'm going to have a wine later, okay, guys? I'm going to have a wine.
And hopefully...
Moscato.
Hopefully you have enjoyed these lovely What the History stories as much as we have. Oh, they've been corkers this time. And would love to hear from you. You can head to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you can leave a comment down below. You can find the What the History podcast page on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter at pod_what. Or you can search for hashtag WTHpod. That should point you in the right direction as well. And, of course, if you want to know more about what we've talked about tonight, we have references in the podcast description down below. So you can click on through and find out more about these very silly events.
You're having a beer. You're having it here and not at Wigan. Obviously, we're nowhere near Wigan.
Yeah, I think it's going to take me a while to get to Wigan just to have a beer. Yeah, we're in Australia.
I might go to Wigan next year when I go to the UK. Yay. Yay me. I'm off to the UK next year. I'm going to go to Wigan and check this place out.
You should check out the Wigan Evening Post's favourite The Last Orders pub.
I will. I will go check it out.
Yeah.
It sounds like fun. And maybe it's a little...
We're meant to waffle at the start of the podcast.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, it's been a long day.
Yes, it has been a long day. So, definitely look, if you want to get in touch with us, please do. We would love to hear from you. And certainly, if you've enjoyed the podcast, let other people know, share it around. We've managed to get a few more on board, which is absolutely awesome. And we just want to keep on growing because this is so much fun and we think this stuff needs to be shared.
Oh, God, yeah. It can't just go down history and... not be shared and, be hidden. It needs to be uncovered. These stories need to be told.
Oh, yes.
Elmer McCurdy, I salute you, sir. Oh,
boy.
See, no one would have known about poor Elmer if, we didn't say it again.
Yeah, well, some people might, but not that widely, so.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Elmer McCurdy. He shall not be forgotten.
Definitely not. He'll go down with Wigan.
He will.
Oh, God, that sounds awful.
So, we will be back in a couple of weeks' time with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say, what the history? Oh, we've lost it.
Oh, God. I think this is one of the ones I've giggled through the most, guys. Okay, I realise I laugh a lot.
Catch you next time.
Bye. Elmer was born in Maine in 1880 and spent time... Oh, God. Oh, my God. Okay.
Deep breath.